Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Weitz, your host. And I'm sad about Lou Reed. Being a New Yorker, I'm sad about Lou Reed dying. This doesn't really have anything to do with the show, although it kind of does, in a way. But I'm going to get back to that in a few minutes. But for now, Lou Reed to me kind of represented the old lost New York City that I bemoan the end of so frequently on this show. The pre-city bike, pre-luxury high-rises in Williamsburg, pre-Highline New York that I left suburban Long Island for in the 80s and that I'll probably now leave in the next few years because it's just like any other city now and what's really the point of living here anymore? I'm just sad, that's all, right? I mean, I can be sad about Lou Reed, can I? But let's get to the show, shall we? Now, you may have noticed that I've been on sort of a philosophical bent in the last few episodes, probably the last few months, as I've spent basically the last 8 months of my life navigating changes career-wise and, you know, age-wise and otherwise. The big themes in life, birth and death and life and marriage, although not in that order and certainly not including all of those. Now, I just came back from California. I was out there for almost 2 weeks because my cousin Robin got married in Malibu. And after her beautiful wedding, we rented a car and drove up the coast for 10 days to take a little vacation because we hadn't taken a vacation in a long time. And so we did some hiking. Actually, we did a lot of hiking and drank a lot of wine and ate some really good food, too. And at this point, I also have to give a special thank you to Cane Vineyard, who's a sponsor of Heritage and a sponsor of my show, who hosted us at their vineyard, and it was unbelievable. And they were extremely generous and great hosts, and thank you, Chris and Katie at Cane Vineyard. But anyway, I'm always amazed by California. As a New Yorker, I go out there and I wonder why anybody would ever want to live any place but there. It's so nice. I always think of California as the place where New Yorkers flee to when they finally escape, like to escape our dark and gray and decaying city, to free ourselves of that neurotic, European, dark, brooding, academic city that we all huddle in for the light, open, free-spirited sunshine of the West. But then I start to think that my entire take on the New York versus California debate actually isn't based on anything except watching Annie Hall about 200 times in my life, and that life here isn't really like that anymore. It was 1975 when that movie came out, and New York was dark and brooding and artistic and crumbling and full of people like Lou Reed, and California was new and bright and shiny and full of people like the ones in the party scene from Annie Hall, the scene where Jeff Goldblum is on the phone with his guru because he forgot his mantra. They were all leaving New York and going to California to escape, like, the Barney Miller era of New York, or even the early Seinfeld era of New York. Not the New York now. Now it's totally changed. But in 1975, the city really was crumbling, and people were scared, and they wanted to escape. Except people like Lou Reed. Now, sorry, I know the show isn't really about Lou Reed, but he's just kind of the perfect metaphor for all of this, and I know I talk about this a lot, but people like Lou Reed were who made New York what it is. Creative and interesting and a little bit scary and edgy and dark. But anyway, back to philosophy and back to what the show is about. Now, I had been reading Michael Pollan's new book called Cooked. I started it a few months ago and I finished it on my trip, and it's really good. It's a great book, and a lot of what was in the book is stuff I already knew, but I even learned a few new things, and I kind of relearned things that I already knew, but now I see them in a new way. And it was especially the chapter about fermentation and about microbes and the circle of life and death and how the microbes create and destroy us and everything and our food and everything else, and how closely and integrally we are tied to microbes. We are bacteria. We are microbes. And in his chapter about Earth and microbes and fermentation, Michael Pollan includes this great quote by Walt Whitman, who was another old school New Yorker who kind of lived on the edge. Maybe Walt Whitman was kind of like the Lou Reed of his day, maybe. But anyway, Whitman in Leaves of Grass says, "Now I am terrified at the earth. It is that calm and patient. It grows such sweet things out of such corruptions. It turns harmless and stainless on its axis with such endless successions of diseased corpses. It distills such exquisite winds out of such infused fetor. It renews with such unwitting looks its prodigal annual sumptuous crops. It gives such divine materials to men and accepts such leavings from them at last." So the point is that we're sustained and kept alive by food, which in itself is made of life, death, birth, ripeness, rot, decay, fermentation, germination, and transformation. All part of the big circle, keeping us alive and then ultimately killing us and then turning us into new life, or at least in theory. So thinking about all of that, the great circle of life, the microbes, the fermentation, Walt Whitman, life, death, Michael Pollan, and Lou Reed, the big question of the week is, how come it's so hard to find food that's not already dead? I say this because after 10 days of being on the road and traveling and eating every single meal in restaurants, and some, of course, being very good, mind you, because it was Northern California after all, I feel like I've ingested a disproportionately huge amount of dead food. Now, I don't just mean cooked food, which according to the raw food fringe is dead food, but you know how I feel about those guys. No, I mean dead, as in processed, embalmed, preserved, and sealed up for eternity like an old great aunt in foam makeup as the lid of her $5,000 bronze casket comes down at the end of her wake. So full of formaldehyde and preservatives and non-human-derived bodily fluids that no microbe of fermentation or decay would ever make a dent at returning her lifeless body to this earthly sauerkraut bucket that we live in, even if it could penetrate the 3 inches of solid brass that she's entombed in to begin with. As in food so heat-treated, retorted, sterilized, and shrink-wrapped as to be the culinary equivalent of an embalmed mummy dug up after 5,000 years from the arid sands of ancient Egypt. Here's an example. So we stayed at a bunch of Marriotts while we were on vacation because my friend's husband is a chef for Marriott, and he got us a friends and family discount pass. And as you know, I am very thrifty and I like a bargain. And the Marriotts were perfectly nice. This is not a criticism of Marriott. Please don't start tweeting me. But when I looked for hotels along the way, I chose the Marriott's if they had the friends and family rate available, and especially if that rate included free breakfast. But that's where my thriftiness thwarts me, because I want breakfast included, but I want it to be my kind of breakfast. And apparently the Marriott Global Director of Food and Beverage does not listen to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food. So he didn't, or she didn't, or they didn't exactly offer what I'd consider to be a Let's Get Real approved first and most important meal of the day. Now, I know that I'm a special case. I'm super discriminating about my food, especially my breakfast, but that's because it's my job to do so. My job as the boss of me, and my job as your personal food coach and spiritual leader and godlike figure when it comes to food. And I need to make sure the world is safe from foodiness infection everywhere, even at hotels in Northern California, the birthplace of the Real Food Earth to Table sustainability movement, the home of Michael Pollan himself. has breakfast buffets full of foodiness. It's insidious and you can't avoid it. Now, I actually started thinking about all of this a few weeks before the trip when we had to attend another family wedding down in Charleston, North Carolina, and we stayed at another Marriott, and they offered the free breakfast, too. And other than a few unnaturally shiny, red, delicious apples that looked a lot like the rouge cheek of the great aunt I mentioned previously, the buffet was all the usual stuff. Industrial-looking scrambled eggs, microwaved sausage patties, biscuits, because we were in the South. Terrible-looking bagels, again, the South. Sliced industrial bread from a bag, instant oatmeal, fruity-flavored yogurt cups with NutraSweet, and lots of little packets of foodiness. All kinds of packets of foodiness. Buttery-flavored foodiness, cream cheese-flavored foodiness, peanut butter foodiness, jelly and jam foodiness. Now, none of the packets contained the actual products. There wasn't butter and cream cheese and peanut butter. It was buttery spread and reduced-fat cream cheese spread and peanut butter spread with added corn syrup and hydrogenated oil spread. Now, butter is simply made of cream and salt. And cream cheese is made from cream and milk and bacteria and rennet and salt. And peanut butter is made from peanuts and maybe salt. Jam and jelly are fruit with sugar and pectin added. Yogurt is milk and bacteria. Bread, flour, water, maybe yeast, and some salt. So why the packaging, the bags, the plastic tubs, and all the waste, the trash, the sealed up and hermetically packaged, the sterile and pasteurized and antimicrobial and sanitized, why all the death? Food is about life and change and temporality. It's fleeting and alive and it dies, but in the process, it becomes other, better foods. All of this so-called food was in suspended animation, embalmed, entombed in plastic, shrink-wrapped, easy peel-off blister packaging. Dead, dead, dead food. The only semi-alive food in the entire place were some sad little chopped scallions that they had thoughtfully put out next to the jar of salsa and the bin of shredded pasteurized processed cheese in case you wanted to add some Latin flair to your microwave scrambled eggs. And don't even get me started on those eggs. Now, I know that I was staying in a chain hotel with a free breakfast thrown in, and as a thrifty sort, I really shouldn't complain about a free breakfast, so I ate a bowl of chopped scallions and an apple, and I was fine. But in our era of massive national obesity and diabetes and heart disease and cancer, can't we at least start offering hotel guests unsweetened yogurt or just plain old peanut butter without corn syrup and added hydrogenated oils? It's not that much to ask, really. And at another place we stayed, not a Marriott, but an historic hotel in Monterey, California, not only was it all dead food, it was all sweetened. There was absolutely nothing on that breakfast buffet table that didn't have added sugar in it. Nothing. No plain yogurt, no plain oatmeal, only packaged breads full of corn syrup and dough conditioners and chemicals and boxed cereal and little blister packs of grape jelly. And again, here we were in the heart of Northern California's food world, but it was as if we were in the middle of a Kansas cornfield. And it was all dead. Dead, sterilized, pasteurized, processed, lifeless, heat-treated, antibiotic, antibacterial, foodiness, death. And of course, the sick irony of our food system is that of all that awful processing is done to our food to theoretically and ostensibly make it more safe, i.e. more likely to sustain life, and of course to make it more convenient, because convenience trumps health in the U.S. So foodiness processing gives us food that hypothetically causes no death, but also doesn't really support any life, and really ultimately causes more death in the long run, whereas real non-foodiness food is part of the endless continuum that Whitman so beautifully described, a never-ending cycle of death and life and death and life. Whereas foodiness just takes something that was once alive, food, and murders it. And then cosmetically revives it with injectables and fillers to appear living, or maybe appear lifelike only. Then seals it up forever in a little bubble package or sealed cup or single-serve Mylar pouch like King Tut himself, or maybe more like Melanie Griffith. Now here's a thought. Foodiness is food purgatory. It's where food goes to die. But it never really dies. It's like social media. There's not reality there. There's no socializing or media. Like reality shows, not reality or fantasy, but something in between, shrink-wrapped and packaged and made shelf-stable to be bought in bulk at Walmart. A 10-pack of housewives, a value pack of assorted rednecks who kill various swamp creatures, the mega savings package of your favorite ethnic groups doing embarrassing things, a 10,000-unit assorted flavor, artificially sweetened, hyper-pasteurized, shelf-stable, birthday cake-flavored, sugar-free foodiness. Nothingness. And of course, it's almost Halloween. Of course. Where scary ghosts and goblins and witches and skeletons roam the streets begging for treats once a year, right? No. There's no more scariness on Halloween, not to mention once a year treats. Now it's all safe and sanitized and sexy. Because sexy is now safer than scary. Your little girl can't be a nurse or a princess or a clown for Halloween anymore. She has to be a sexy nurse or a sexy princess or a sexy clown, and it's foodiness sexiness too. There's nothing authentically sexy about it. Nothing creative or intimate or dark edge tinged with little fear of the unknown. Nothing that Lou Reed would have liked. Not that you'd ever think of allowing your five-year-old to be that way, I'd hope. So why dress your five-year-old up as a stripper? Because foodiness sexiness is like foodiness breakfast. Sterile, sanitized, shelf-stable, universally accepted. No sugar added. Artificially birthday cake flavored, dead, embalmed, and buried. We're going to take a short break here. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Lung by Iggy Dean on the Heritage Radio Network.org. Stay tuned for more from Let's Get Real.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Welcome back to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. So as I say every show, remember, if you like what you hear on this show, you can find many, many more shows on the Heritage Radio Network website at heritageradionetwork.com. You can also find all of our shows on iTunes, and they're free. So if you're thrifty like me, they're free. And also, please follow me on Twitter at Let's Get Real Show. And you can also find Let's Get Real on Facebook. I need about 20,000 more Twitter followers, okay, by the end of the year. That's my goal, 20,000. I have like 425 right now, so it's not that much to ask, 20,000. So tell your friends, tell your mom, tell your hairdresser, tell whoever tweets in your life. What else was I going to say about that? That's about it. Okay, so remember a few shows back, you know, I've been on this philosophical kind of thing the last few months. And so a couple of shows back, and I know I've taken a lot of time off, and I'm sorry. It's been a challenging year, and then I had to go on vacation, but I am back. So a while back, I talked about fear and facing your fears and taking risks. I talked about leaping into the unknown by doing things like eating real fruit, eating a ripe peach, or eating a real apple. Now, Halloween, which I mentioned before the break, was always the holiday about fear of scary things that went bump in the night or of the night itself. You know, the scary boys on your block who on the bus ride home from school would start boasting about how they were going to run around with cans of Nair. Remember that on the bus? Did that happen to you? The scary boys would always say they were going to run around the neighborhood with Nair, and you better watch out because they were going to spray the Nair on your head. before the sun went down, when you were on the bus coming home before trick-or-treating, and you never really knew if they were lying or not, but you went out with a hat that night just in case, even if the hat was not a part of your costume or didn't match your costume, and it would kind of mess up your costume. But who wanted to get Nair on their head? Now, I have no kids, and I'm not having any kids, so I have no idea now if kids actually think of Halloween as a scary night, if the fear is still there, or if it's just a night to dress up as a sexy accountant and go load up on candy that they'd otherwise eat every day, since candy has become one of our major food groups in the American diet now. Now, what's so exciting about collecting a bag of mini Hershey bars and Snickers that you have to self-ration out and hide from your sister and your father, and that you hope will last until Hanukkah when you get the stupid bag of chocolate gold coins while your Christmas friends get reloaded up on their religiously sanctioned sugar haul, if you just regularly eat candy every day anyway? Now, maybe you're not eating candy in its regular form every day, but you are in the sweetened drinks and pink swirled yogurt and multicolored cereal and maple leaf flavored frozen waffles with syrup baked right in, and the packaged bread and the nuggets and the peanut butter and a million other foodiness and just plain old shittiness food products that have sugar in them as their main ingredient. I used to have to keep that bag of Halloween candy and ration it out until like the end of the year, because that was basically it for us. And I think candy's like not so much of a treat now, because it's kind of like an everyday thing. Like Cookie Monster says, cookies are a sometime food. So if you think about it, Lou Reed actually does pertain to this episode, because Lou Reed lived and died, and he did incredible things in between and pushed the envelope and faced the dangers and made the music and basically invented alternative music and punk and did the drugs and created the art and destroyed his liver in the process. And he was young and then he was old and now he's dead, but he mattered. Now all of that has been wiped away by real estate developers looking to cash in on the value of his legacy while wiping away any chance for young people to do it again and replenish the culture. And that's foodiness. That's foodiness culture. Just like New York and Halloween have been drained of death and danger and life and death, so has food. When you take out life and death, you're left with nothing. That's City Bike New York. That's foodiness. Now, FDR said, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." He didn't say it like that, though. He said it with his patrician accent, which people don't have anymore. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. But we've removed the fear, or at least the fear that comes with eating real, alive food. The scariness of eating real food. Food causes fear precisely because it's alive and it's dying and uncertain and unstable and unknown. It's a living thing and it dies. Foodiness has none of that. Now, what would FDR make of that? Eleanor Roosevelt, his wife, legally his wife, you know, she was, well, that's another story. Now, while she was an amazing historical figure and also one of my heroines, speaking of Lou Reed, heroines, was also a notorious anti-sensualist when it came to food. Eleanor Roosevelt embraced the early so-called scientific notion about food and nutrition that came out of the 1920s, where scientists and nutritionists got together and they thought that foods should be cooked until they became gray piles of pulp, and that strong flavors and spices and anything like that were unhealthy, that they would get you too excited, and that food was for nourishment and not pleasure. It was this sort of Puritan approach. There was all this scientific knowledge and thought behind it. And maybe when FDR made that quote about fear, he was just actually talking about Eleanor Roosevelt's cooking. It's hard to know. But they lived in separate houses, and I think he probably had someone cooking for him separately. So this Halloween, I think I'm going to dress myself up as sexy Eleanor Roosevelt. And I'm going to walk around the neighborhood scaring kids with really overcooked food. I'm going to walk around with pots of gray peas cooked until they're completely dissolved, and fish that I bake so long in the oven that it turns to dust when you touch it. Because in my little real food bubble world of Brooklyn, that actually might be scarier than anything that they could conjure up themselves. The thought of a vegetable cooked until it dissolves into a gray pulp might be scarier than a witch or a goblin or a, you know, a sexy garbage man. Scarier maybe than a sexy paramedic or a sexy private school consultant or a sexy doula or, you know, a sexy dermatologist. Or maybe I'll go to Costco and I'll buy 10,000 industrial apples, the kind that they fly in from Chile that are covered with waxes and pesticides and fungicides and chemicals, the kind that look beautiful and shine like jewels but taste like dust, the kind that littered the breakfast buffets of Northern California. And just for old time's sake, I'm going to take those shiny, beautiful red apples and I'm going to stick razor blades in them just to keep it exciting, to go kind of retro this year, to keep it old school, to play on the Gen X nostalgia trip, to give the parents something to tweet about. So if you don't want a sexy Eleanor Roosevelt coming to your door with boiled rutabagas, and you definitely don't want to find a non-organic apple surrounding your razor blade, you need to keep on listening to Let's Get Real, the cooking show about finding, preparing, and eating food here on the Heritage Radio Network with me, your host, Erica Wides. Otherwise, there's not really much help that I can give you. Thanks to Joe in the control room tonight. Thanks to Chris Nutter, my co-producer. Thanks to Ben Kaplan, who wrote the theme music. And another big thanks to Chris Howell and Katie at Cane Vineyard for their incredible hospitality. We will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.